Hello and welcome to Between Two Cairns. I'm Yochai.
Hello, hi, hello there, I'm Brad.
I'm Ava.
Hello, Ava, hi, hello.
Hi, hello.
Hi, Yochai.
Hi.
Yochai, good morning, good afternoon,
well,
hello.
Let me just say the thing and then we'll go right back to that.
Hello, listeners. Uh-huh. Hello out there, okay. Hello. Okay. Hello, listeners.
Okay.
Hello.
Today we're going.
Go ahead. Keep going with today, the show here, buddy. Keep going.
Today we're going to review Sleeping Place of the Feathered Swine. But first, let's introduce our guest. Hello, Ava Islam. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay. I am very excited to talk to you about this and about the OSR in general. And I know Brad feels the same way.
Ava Islam, how's it going? Wow. Hi. Hello.
So glad to be here, Brad. Wow. Geez. What an honor. What an honor to be on the illustrious show Between Two Cairns. Talk about Logan Knight's seminal adventure, Sleeping Place of the Feathered Swine. Can you believe it? What a show we have today, folks.
Goodness gracious. Gosh, snakes alive.
Okay.
Ava, I got a question for
this
you.
This is going to be an episode of like Yochai being like, we're playing like washing machine on the playground. Like he is just going to be like pushed back and forth, tumbled between like Scylla and Charybdis over here, right?
Dashed
against the rocks.
I don't play that game on the schoolyard, but that sounds like a fun one.
Never heard of it either. So
it's like you make a circle and then someone goes in the circle and then they kind of just like drop and you like, it's like aggressive trust falling. So they just kind of drop and you just like push that motherfucker around.
Oh my goodness. I don't like that.
Am I allowed to swear on this show?
You can. I think just sometimes people say, hey, let me know so I can turn it down when my kids are around. But if it's not a lot, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I know Chris P has his kids in the car. So, you know, we got to look out for Chris P. Shout outs to Chris P and Chris P's kids. What up, Chris P?
Okay.
Am I right?
Okay. Anyhow, Ava, let's do some introductions here. I think most folks know who you are nowadays because of your game Errant. But before that, I think watchful listeners will have read your blog, Permanent Cranial Damage, which has some pretty major posts on it over the last couple of years, at least to me. And kind of before that, you just sort of been a voice in the indie tabletop scene, especially around the old school Renaissance revival, whatever. Would you add anything to that list? Am I missing anything?
No. I think that's actually like a much more generous overview of my contributions than I would have given. No, absolutely nothing to add to that.
That's okay. Well, I think more recently, folks might have heard about your first sort of like official published adventure for Errant, which is Sanctimonious Slimes versus Expired Epicures. Is that how you pronounce that word, Epicures?
It is Epicure.
Which is just a dungeon delve for Errant, written by Nicholas Whelan. Whelan? How does he say his last name?
Whelan.
Whelan, thank you.
Whelan.
Whelan.
Irish.
Yes.
Whelan is, I think, like the original, like the Irish name that it's derived from. It's like a Whelan. It means like little wolf.
Oh, Whelan. That's awesome. Anyhow, and that includes an adventure by Nick, but also another by Gus L., which is like, I just got both in the mail. And yes, okay, I really enjoy the illustrations and presentation of Sanctimonious Slimes versus Expired Epicures, but my goodness, does the one from Gus it's called The Curse of the Ganshogger?
The Curse of the Ganshogger.
Got that goose on it. I'm telling you, that
it's
goose.
Not just the goose. It's the paper quality. When I first got it,
it's the whole gander.
Texted Brad and I said, this is such nice quality. I have to ask about like what kind of paper this is because it's really nice. And of course it's Gus. Oh,
I have the specs there. That was like, there's actually a whole like story behind that. That was like really, really funny because like, way back when we were like funding Errant and we had the Kickstarter, there was this like one Risograph studio that was having like some kind of deal or whatever on like, you know, here's like 100, you know, $200 for 100 Risograph scenes, like special offer. And you don't have to like give us the files now. You can give us the files like within a year. And I was like, yeah, sure. We've got like the spare Errant cash lying around. Let's do it. I'm sure we could put that to use at some point. And then it took like way longer than a year. We like emailed them at like the year mark and we were like, hey, we did this. Is it okay if we print later? And they're like, yeah, sure. And then when we finally did get to doing Sanctimonious Slimes, we tried to contact them could not get in touch with them at all. And so we actually ended up like having to find like a separate Risograph printing studio, who were great. We used V-Day Press out of Toronto. Those guys were awesome. The paper quality, if you want to know it, Yohai, it was interior paper was 80-pound Mohawk via vellum text.
Ooh.
And then the cover paper was vellum.
That is fancy.
So wait, original studio just took the money and ran?
They seem like they are like slammed to all hell right now. And like they like, cause like when we were looking at it, they were like not accepting any like new commissions or whatever. And I figure like if we get in touch with them, we get in touch with them and we can either be like, yeah, like here's the thing. Would you mind refunding us or like figure something else out to do?
Yeah, I'm tired of these big Risograph studios.
Someone needs
stop
to take a stand.
Walking around like they own the place.
Riso.
Yeah, big Riso is just shaking their big butts around, and we all got to get out of the way when they're walking. I'm like, excuse me, you know, geez.
Look, I just want to say I think it's great quality, and I'm definitely going to think about doing something in Riso at some point. I mean, it's like one of those expensive things. Like in the Karen store, the most expensive stuff that I sell is all on Risograph, you know, printed paper, and it looks really nice, but it's just expensive. But do I appreciate it? You know, it's nice. So good job. I don't know how else to end that tangent.
Thank you.
Well, let's go a little, I guess,
hey,
deeper.
What's hot right now? Okay. What's like the hottest thing out there? What's the hottest thing going out there right now?
Oh man, I couldn't tell you. I've been in my house. I've just been like cooped up here for like 2 years. The other thing that I do, I suppose, here's like a little whatever, a little here plug. Because I also editor / now co-writer of the Electrum Archive with Emil Bovin.
Oh, no kidding.
That we are actually just finishing up, like way, way behind, but like finally finishing touches on issue 2, which is going to be a banger. Big, big, chunky lad, 80 pages. Not, really stretching what you could call a zine as if we hadn't already. But that should be out like soon.
Nice.
As I think I've said previously, I love the Electrum Archive issue 1. I love it. It's inspirational. It's beautiful. It's good. I'm a backer of the second issue. So I've been seeing the updates that, Emil has been posting, on Kickstarter and like, God, it's not fair when people are so talented. It's just not a fair, like the art and the writing. And I know, you work with other people too. I know, but still. God, that guy is so talented. And so are you. And I'm glad that you're kind of at the helm there as well. I think that's such a good combination of talent. So, if folks haven't, you can still pre-order it, right? You can go to the Kickstarter page and pre-order issue 2 still.
I assume so. Okay. Yeah. Cool. This is actually, we like recently bumped me up to co-writer, which is like, even like as an editor, I was like pretty hands-on. Like I'd say like a lot of the finished sentences in the first one were kind of like mostly me, but like now I'm, you know, like doing like more hands-on stuff with like actually like shaping and the setting and stuff or whatever. But like it is very nice to like have a change where I just like can focus on like making stuff and not like think about the logistics or the Kickstarter or any of that. I let Emil stress over that.
Of course. I think as far as I know, the original is only available as a PDF now too. So for folks who are interested in getting
that's being reprinted with
the second.
Issue
no, that's what I was going to say is for folks who want the original, you can still get the print version as a add-on or something for the second issue. I just remember seeing that. Totally worth it. It's amazing. Electrum Archive is great.
Cool.
Do you have anything else in the future? I mean, I know you just finished up your first published.
What's cooking?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Killjester. That's your kind of publishing outfit,
right?
Is there anything else coming for Killjester in the future from other?
I'm definitely being a little cool. Like I'm being a little bit hands off with Killjester, I think, for a bit, because last couple years were little rough on the home front. Yeah. So like taking a moment to like get that sorted. Like we really had like Sanctimonious Slimes like in the pipeline for a bit to do. And then that like, but we just like kept putting off the Kickstarter because it was like not a good time. So it was really a matter of like getting that out and then finishing. I think that there is like, there might be like some like PDFs here and there that I release of like little things that like I work on. But like, I think I might like just like let it ride for a little bit, but definitely like not like abandoning it.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, just let it marinate, you know?
Let it marinate.
That actually, you know? It's interesting. Do you feel like when you stop working on a project for a while and then come back to it, do you ever feel like you're running into some of the same pitfalls and like there was no point in the break? Or do you feel like for you, oh no, I see it from a totally different light now?
I'll see the floor to Bradley if he wants to talk first. I don't
feel, you know, beholden to, you know, my past self to fulfill some kind of dream that was once there. If something isn't popping, then who cares? Let it die, you know? The bluebird of inspiration flies where it will, and I'm not going to dig up its corpse or attempt to if it's not singing in my ear, you know?
Okay.
So if a project doesn't feel fresh, if it's not cooking, if it's not hot, if it's not what's hot now, if it's not so hot, then so what? Go play video games, you know? You don't owe anything to anybody, all right? Enjoy your life.
Okay, you don't owe anything to anybody. Got it. Yeah, so I feel like putting stuff down is putting it down forever for me. It's just not how I operate. I just pick a thing and I work on that and then I don't return to it again later. That may be a bad thing, but that is how I operate. I have a hard time returning. Once, you know, I'm all about killing your darlings, right? So once something is gone, it's a shame, but I just can't bring myself to pick it up. So maybe that's a bad thing, but I'm with you, Brad, to some degree. Quite so. Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like, I mean, and maybe this is like a different perspective, at least like when we're talking about RPGs from like an adventure, which is like maybe this like more like discreet and like singular thing. Whereas with Aaron, I feel like this like might be something that like, even if I'm publishing it or not, it's probably something I'm going to be like coming back to and touching up for whatever the rest of my life. Maybe by the end of it, it won't look like anything like this. It didn't look anything like this when it started, but it is sort of like mostly like just like this like personal system of like, how do I like to run these kinds of games? Like what is my thing here? And so in that sense, like it definitely is, I think it usually is that like when I come back to it, I come back to it with fresh eyes. I come back to it like, cause like you have like lots of, Herbie Hancock has this thing.
When here we go.
In his interview with Jacob Collier, when he's just like, music, like Jacob's like, how do you have the courage to like make a choice when you're like doing composition, doing harmony or whatever, when, you know, the more you know, everything becomes more expansive and these options like all open up for you. So like within that, how do you like have the strength to like make a choice? And he's just like, music isn't different from life, right? Like it comes from experience. And I think that's like what it is for me, is like, you know, if I'm like in a place, I'm having this problem, it's like, whatever, I set it down, I go about my life, that path goes where it will. And then I come back and it's like, oh, okay, there's like, I have more experience, I have more context, I'm viewing this in a different way. And then in that sense, broadly also, like, it's like, do you ever really like put anything down? Like maybe something doesn't work out in like one form or one fashion, but like, I don't know, it's like, it's all the same current, right? It's all the same river. The rock gets like tumbled and smoothed and it becomes maybe something else.
Yeah, heck yeah. You're speaking my language. I like that. Invoking the name of Herbie here. That's powerful.
Love words, Herbie.
Ava. Yeah. Shout outs. Herbie. Hope you're listening, dude.
In the words of Tim Robinson, that's my favorite thing about Herbie Hancock. He lies.
I don't think Herbie Hancock is listening.
I'm curious about, let's talk about Aaron for a minute here. So I know we don't talk a lot about systems on this podcast. I mean, we mention systems, but you know, it's not like we do deep dives on, you know, what's different between, you know, basic fantasy and white box. We just don't do that. But I do think Errant is worth bringing up because what it's sort of known for is a number of modular systems that can be, you know, from my perspective, used it, not outside of the context of the rest of the system, like it's like they do depend on each other to some degree, but you can, for instance, look at the way lockpicking works in Errant and bring that over to your own system. And I don't think that's very difficult to do personally.
It's a toolbox.
Right. It's a toolbox. Exactly. But I think people like to speak about systems in a very blasé fashion without truly understanding them. And that does a disservice, I think, to the work you've done on Errant, which is very interesting. Like it's probably too crunchy in some ways for my personal tastes, but there are some subsystems that go with my, as you described it, loosey-goosey Karen approach. And I do appreciate them for that. And in fact, they're sort of an interesting synthesis of the best ideas to come out of not just the OSR, but out of your own brain, because there's a lot of really original stuff there. And I just think that what folks who haven't heard of Errant might not know is that it is a modular toolkit for running OSR games, but it also can and should be run as a singular system that accomplishes a lot of what people say they care about in the old school Renaissance. So I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about why you started being interested in game design. Like where did that come from? The same sort of preferences you mentioned a few moments ago, or was there like a general dissatisfaction with other systems? Like what was the genesis to make, you know, damn it, I need to start making my own thing. And I don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to be very different from where I started.
Oh, like probably the same as everything else, right? Which is like parental trauma. Like for the most part, like my like this like really maybe is like the overriding like impulse that like shaped my life. But like from like I think my parents were trying to be nice. I think this was like them trying to be like the stereotypical like immigrant parents, like be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, accountant, and they were like, no. Do whatever you want. Be whatever you want to be. Just make sure you're the best at it. Like, make sure no one is better than you. Make sure you do things like to abs and like a lot of just like as a kid, like trying to do anything and then having my parents immediately swoop down and be like, this is it sucks. You suck. This is awful. Why aren't you doing it right? So I think that governs like anything I do, which is like a thing that I'm working on, but like is like this like incredibly like perfectionist impulse and like feeling of like inadequacy of like being like, well, I obviously could be doing this better. I should be doing this better. So I really did just start with like 5e, and like, you know, wanting to run 5e for my friends and then being like, okay, well, obviously though, I've got to do this better. And then I think like in terms of just like, well, I do what I did, which is go on the internet. And then like, think the first stuff that Google was not like completely borked. So when I like Googled stuff, like actual like human beings came up, and that's like, so I found like OSR blogs, and it kind of just like started from there. I was like, oh, okay, these guys, and I'm very susceptible to this, especially like sort of back in the early 5e days, there was a lot of like 5e is like OSR, but you still had like traces and remnants of like, I think like the OSR sort of superiority attitude left over from the sort of edition war days, where it's like, you know, 5e's like OSR stuff's better than 3.x or 4e. And I think even some of that carried over to like 5e, where it's like, yeah, like 5e is okay, but it's still not like the real deal. It's still like not like how the real cool kids like play D&D. And I was like, I want to be a cool kid. So I was like trying to run OSR games, trying to do it in a 5e way. It was not working, was not clicking with my brain. I think I've like gone over this like a bunch of times, but I was like just like real like simple like logistical stuff of just like, how do you like, what is a hex? Hex, like how do you move from one to the other? And so like Errant really was just like a series of just like weird like praxis challenges of being like trying to solve problems one after the other, like being like, how do I do this thing? Let me find someone who's done it. Let me find a blog post. Let me find a game that does it in a way. Like I try that out, tinker it, whatever. And then eventually, you know, you have this like collection of like house rules or systems or whatever that like accretes into something more. And that was basically it.
So is that sort of Desi toxic perfectionism that you mentioned? Is that like, are you saying that your own feelings of inadequacy led to trying to create a system that was perfect? Is that, I'm just trying to grapple with what you're saying.
I don't think it led to me trying to create a system that was perfect. But I think that like the system was like a result of the process of like me working through like trying so desperately to be a good girl that like daddy would love. Yeah.
It's interesting because I my parents never told me to be good, you know? And I kind of wish they did, because there's stuff that I just like did not explore at an early age that would have made me better at things today, like, you know, drawing or something, or, you know, good proper handwriting. Instead, they just like accepted me for who I was, which is, I'm envious about 1% of what you're describing is what I'm trying to say. So it's just interesting to hear the downsides of it. I've heard it before, but hey, at least it led to something kind of cool in this case, right? Yes.
Sure. I mean, like there's other aspects. Like I actually like stopped drawing because of the like weird, like twisted way my parents had of like talking to me about a lot of things. but like at risk of this like becoming a therapy session, like sure, we can leave it at that. Like, yeah, like it led to this. And I will say actually that I think that like in the process, like I think the main thing, the thing about like perfectionism that like holds you back is that like just like not actually doing the thing, like obviously like just doing the thing is usually like the best way to get good at it. And like usually I think the result of my perfectionism has been never doing the thing. But I think the nice thing about Aaron was like I did the thing. And through it, I think I also managed to like let go of a lot of those impulses and like sort of come to a better place. But it is actually like very funny now in that I think that like half of like the like in the Aaron Discord, a lot of the stuff that I deal with from certain people are people that are like very clearly like having the same kind of like anxiety and like toxic perfectionism and like coming to Aaron because it seems to be this like such a complete thing that offers like so many answers, but they also like get stuck on so many places where like I like had accepted that it's like, this is just like a thing. This is just a thing that you do. You right. will develop intuition. You will develop right. experience. You will develop right. discretion and you'll get like good at it and you can actually just trust yourself here. And then they'll always be like, what should I do here? And I say like, I'm basically just that, like, just, well, this is a case where you just trust yourself. They freak the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. This is very interesting. So this is, I think, a good segue into our mood set question, which sort of relates to this, feelings of inadequacy that I think come up in the scene a lot. And, I'll just read it and then we'll go from there.
Start the questions. The mood sack. We got a question from the mood sack. The mood sack. Let's pull it out. The mood sack. That's what we call our mailbag. It's just a cute little name.
Mm-hmm. So this comes in from Seedling Games, from the Discord. Not sure if this is a good mood sack question, which let's just take a step back. Already off to a great start here.
Really already in the muck.
Not sure if this is a good mood sack question, but it is one of the big questions I have these days about TTRPGs. How do you keep track of what's going on? There's Discord, but I can keep up with about 2 Discords at any one time. I like Mastodon the most, but now I have to learn Blue Sky. But tons of people are still on Twitter. I'm subscribed to so many mailing lists that I am usually a month behind on my TTRPG-related emails, and likewise for my RSS feed. And I still feel like I don't know much about what is going on in the TTRPG scene anymore. Meanwhile, I'm also trying to play games now and then. How do you keep up with what's going on? I guess then the question would be, how do you feel connected to the larger TTRPG community? If I am making stuff or writing blog posts, I feel like I can't add anything unless I first know what other people are saying. Again, that came in from Seedling Games on the Karen Discord through the Between Two Karens channel. So I'll just field this to you, Ava. First question, how do you keep track of what's going on? And second question, that whole other thing I read.
Yeah, I think that like in this case, this is like one of those ones where it seems like it's gotten to a point where I feel like probably the healthiest thing to do or whatever is to just like give up on the whole endeavor and like not like actually like give up, but just like stop worrying about it for the time being. And it like, you'll eventually like get to a healthy place, because I think this is like, I've actually like, this is funny. Like I've been very like not keeping up with like RPG stuff. Like my RSS feed has like lain fallow for like quite some time, but like, I honestly actually feel like I'm, for the first time in like quite a few years, like actually like getting back into the swing of things, like gaming and doing game design in like an enjoyable way. And that is just because like, I don't know, like it's really not that big a deal. Like so much of stuff that like happens, like 99% of stuff is, and this is like not in a judgmental way, but it's kind of just like dreck. It's just kind of noise. And that's like how human civilization works. Like you just throw a bunch of stuff at the table, and through like the processes of like history and social movement and whatever, like things get filtered down into like the actual important bits. It's like stuff starts as conversation and ends up as like books and stuff that you can like read. And that's like really like the most meaningful part. Like, yeah, you might want to read like Lewis Carroll's letters or whatever, but like the main important thing is like Alice in Wonderland or whatever. And I think that's just like the thing. It's just like, pick the thing. If you like want to keep up with something, like pick one or two things, like, you know, pick your newsletters, pick your RSS feeds, and you'll probably be fine. But like, probably the main thing is like, if you're doing stuff, if you're reading games, reading stuff, like playing games, I think playing games is like maybe like the most important thing. I don't think it gets like enough emphasis in this hobby that just like actually playing games is maybe what you should do. And the more time you spend on like games discourse, it's like literally an opportunity cost, but just like play games in person. I'm playing games in person right now with people that aren't in the broader TTRPG community. And it's like so good and so refreshing and just like so like actually fun and joyous. And it's like, oh, this is like why I started doing this in the first place, and not to like email people back and forth about like warehousing costs and like shipping from China and shit like that. And yeah, and I think that it's just like with regards to the second thing about like making stuff and like actually how do you get involved in conversation and what will you keep up with? I think this is just like the one where it's just like trust the human brain, trust the way we've evolved to be social creatures, right? Like this just like happened. Like when we were born, we didn't like have to like literally catch up. I mean, I guess kind of school is this, but like school runs concurrently. You don't like catch up on all of human history and discourse as you go. You just kind of send that shit. And then like so when stuff becomes like relevant to you, it like enters the conversation and you like take the parts that are like important or relevant or like catch you and you just like incorporate that into yourself. I think this is like a case where like to be like very like I don't know, like cliche psychology brain, but it's like trust the inner child, right? Like we didn't worry so much when we were kids about like what we needed. Like we just like navigated the world and learned new things, and the things that were interesting to us, we like trusted to keep close and like to hold to and form bits of ourselves. And I think that's like the thing. Like once you like start making work or doing things, like it feels almost inevitable that like either you or your work will start to like enter into like broader pockets of conversation. It'll like move through the world. It'll circulate through things. And through doing that, it'll come into contact with the things that it needs to. Like if you just like have five friends that like make RPGs, like some of them will be on like two or three Discords that you're not on. And that like, you know, like the network effect, it works. It just works.
It sounds a little bit, the earlier portion of what you're saying, it reminds me of that. I think you may have made a post about this at some point in the last couple of years as well, but it's like that Joski tax thing, you know, like,
yeah,
if for those who don't know, the Joski tax is basically for every piece of discourse that you're contributing to the world, you know, your opinion on theory or whatever, you got to contribute something interesting, like a cool table or a spell or a monster or whatever. So yeah,
something immediately game up.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's the tax on not, you know, BS discourse, which is perpetually running around the OSR. And I remember, you asked for a revival of that at some point, and it got some traction there. And I think it needs to be kind of shouted from the rooftops every month at least, because it's just so cyclical, this absurd scene and trying to keep up with stuff. I don't care. I will not talk about rules elide on this podcast. I don't care. I don't understand why it's important. I ain't
trying to hear the word elide right now. I don't want to hear that word.
Yeah.
All right. Don't say that word.
I will actually say that having some distance from the scene and stuff has actually given me a bit of a greater appreciation for that. Is that like I actually think that like the rules elide folks, like there's like there's a little bit of like a, you know, some people have called it the post OSR, the like diaspora effect or whatever, these like weird, like little pockets of like innovating and like their own traditions. Like I think you've got like kind of like, there's like the NSR Cairn type stuff. There was like, I think proceduralism had a moment. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was ever like meant to be like long lasting, but then like people are branching off from that. I know there's like a kind of cluster of folks like Nova and like Marsha and like Sandra that like are doing stuff that's like really interesting with like social sort of gaming. And then you've got the like rules allied people. And I think that they're also like doing like really interesting, like formally innovative, like experimental work. I think it is like genuinely, I think all of these people are like in this kind of like theory bubble or whatever, like pushing that forward. And I do wish that like all of the like weird, unfortunate, like social posturing and sniping and stuff that tends to go along with that didn't have to mm-hmm. exist, but it's like, whatever, again, like that's the filter effect. It'll kind of all come out in the wash. People aren't going to look at that so much, except maybe as like a curiosity or a footnote. And like, we'll be left with like whatever the like crystallizations of the process are. And that's like the actual valuable thing. But like in general, yeah, people put the cart before the horse in this hobby so much, where it's like you get so caught up in like following the scene and keeping up to date. And it's right. Just like, brother, what are we here right. for, right? Like, don't you just right. like want to have fun and play games? Like, if you're doing that, you're fine.
I mean, our brains, as you said, are not designed for us to wake up at 7 in the morning, look at a phone, and come up with a cohesive argument against whatever people are talking about. Like, it's not supposed right. to happen like that. We're supposed to be mm-hmm. just living our lives. And so much of... I mean, I'm 41 and I have a distinct memory of pre-internet, and so much of, I think, my initial brain development was allowed to happen because it wasn't constantly constrained by these outside forces that don't effing matter. And I don't disagree. I think there is interesting theory out there and it does have value. It's more about like the, like, well, so what is your take on, like, who cares about your take? Just do the thing. If you want to write a response to something, do it. That's totally cool. Also contribute something awesome that's usable. And that's the thing I didn't mention about the Josky tax is if you don't do that, if you don't pay it, you automatically lose the argument. Whatever you're having, that's what he said.
I'll say in like defense, I guess, of the like discourse sphere or whatever. And like, I do think that like the delusion, the quantity of it and the form is like maybe not super conducive. But I think that like there's like a level at which like if you chill out and take a look, and this is maybe like influenced by my Desi background, but like swearing alert, bitches gossip, like bitches love to gossip. And that's just like a normal human thing. Is you just like kind of like talk shit and you gossip and you do idle chit chat and you shoot the shit. And I think that like is essentially just like what Twitter is. Like you can just like not take it that seriously and just be like, this is people like doing like the normal like human sociality type thing of just like saying bullshit. But like also that is, I think, again, a little bit of that like process of like rocks colliding against each other. Like some of them will fall and crumble, but that is also like the crucible in which like the social friction and people paying off each other and whatever is like, I think, a valuable part of the process of like kind of sharpening yourself against others and like making stuff. I think that's like the crucial thing. But like, I mean, even if you don't like make stuff, you are like maybe in some sense like contributing to the conversation that like leads to making stuff. We're all just like, we're all in it, right? We're all in the like tapestry of humanity together. But I think it's just like important to like, again, like have some like perspective on it, like not get too caught up in it, not like think of it as the be all end all. Like it is ultimately just like whatever is like in service of like the things that you find meaningful at the base, at the root.
Hear, hear. I mean, if most people, yeah. if more people on Twitter could just not give a shit, it would make it a lot easier in general.
Yeah.
It's just the people who get themselves too involved, you know, no argument is worth it. No tweet is worth it. That's my mantra, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want anything you want to add to that, Brad, or are you staying silent for this one too?
No, I mean, you know, I don't, okay. I think like paying attention to the discourse and like conversation around gaming, like can inspire, but I think it's kind of like a Sisyphean pursuit. Like you're never going to see everything that's out there. And there's, you know, there's like a myriad miniature swirls of thought, and like chasing all of those is, you know, it's a waste of time. Like for me, it's like, just like follow the artists that are making cool stuff, you know? And I feel like that's, you're probably already doing that and like know how to use the search. But like, I don't think you need to know what's going on to make art. You can just do whatever, you know, you feel inspired by. I do to some extent get annoyed though when I see someone on like put on Reddit who's like, hey, I want to make an RPG adventure. How do I do it? What should I do? And it's like, use the search bar, pal. You know, like what, like, you know, if you're not that guy, then I think you're fine. You don't have to know what's going on. You know, you don't have to know that there's a bunch of spaceship games out there to make your own spaceship game. Have fun. Do it. Who cares? You know, what are you trying to do? You're trying to get rich, or you're trying to like, let the music of your soul sing a little bit, you know? I guess I don't really care about the answer at the end of the day here. Do whatever you want to do. It's none of my business.
Maybe you alluded to the real answer is, you know, one must imagine Sisyphus happy. It's all at the end of the day, like the inured like pointlessness of it all. The goal is just to enjoy yourself. Just like that's what we've been circling around. Just make sure you're enjoying yourself. Have fun with it.
Here's a tangent. It's like when I'm gonna shift over here. I'm talking about comic book world. Okay. The most miserable comic book fans to me are the ones who follow a character. They're like, I am a Wolverine fan, because they are always mad at the direction of the character, and they're always chasing some kind of nostalgia or something. It's fake. All right. And by the way, you're a fan of a brand, not like anything more than that, pal. You know what I mean? It's like being a fan of Nabisco or something. Anyway. Okay. the right way, I think, to enjoy comic books is to follow the artists and the writers. You know, find someone that's interesting, find someone that's making cool stuff and follow that. You know, somehow this feels like staying, you know, caught up or aware of RPG world as well. If you want to be miserable, then go ahead and follow every like blog post and discourse and every little news item about everything that's happening in the world. You're going to drive yourself crazy. Like, follow the people who are making art that actually have something to say, that are doing something interesting. Okay. Don't follow the brands, follow the people that are making something. And that's how like you're going to find enjoyment in the world. That's, I feel like that's how I try to live, but I get caught up in the discourse and I get miserable too.
I feel like personally attacked as like a really diehard Spidey fan, and Spidey fans are maybe the most miserable of any.
No one has it worse than Spider-Man fans.
Here's like another swear, like fuck Marvel editorial. All my homies hate Marvel editorial. Let Chip Zdarsky do a Spider-Man run. He's never going to do a Spider-Man run because of Marvel editorial. Mainline Spider-Man. I mean, Tassim. Yeah. He's never going to do Tassim, and I'll cry about it every day.
How about One More Day, though, huh? That was a good time, right? You like that one?
Well, come on, dude. That's like literally, that's some people listening to the show like might not have been alive when One More Day came out. Like, and they're adults. Like, they're adults who can like vote and drive and
drink.
That's
true. Yeah. Oh, man. Yes. Forget. No, don't. Watch the movies. Don't pick up the Spider-Man comic book. You're not going to have a good time. When was the last good Spidey run? My God, forget it.
The last one is the professional mix. It's always whatever the run was before the last one.
God, people like talking nostalgically about Dan Slott. I'm like, oh my God. I don't want to call it Dan Slott, but
like, it's not the worst comparatively. There's no Paul. We don't have to deal with freaking Paul.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Well, this has been a great episode of the Between Two Spiders podcast. And I know how our listeners feel when Brad and I talk about something that only he and I know or care about. I actually do love Spider-Man, to be clear, but I'm only familiar with the films. I've never read the comic. I've read other comics, just not that one.
I think Dan Slott's made some good stuff too. I like the Silver Surfer run. I'm not trying to start a talk trash. All right.
Like post 90s, post Clone Saga. Like it is a white elephant, right? Like getting handed Tassim. Like there's no way you actually can pull that off. It's impossible. Yeah. Spider-Man has been probably good since like the 80s.
Though the new Ultimate run sounds interesting, right? With what's his name? Our guy. Who's writing Ultimate Spider-Man right now?
Isn't Ultimate Spider-Man like Dunzo? Like
there's a new run. He has a beard now.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Jonathan Hickman. They can't just be like, Hickman, save all of our properties. Like, thanks for saving X-Men.
Come on.
We did this in Hollywood with J.J. Abrams. We know where this goes. Like, no one man should have all that power.
Hickman won't let us down. He's got it all right. He's not going to ever disappoint.
Don't put your faith in false prophets. No, we're not letting Yohai take this back. We're driving off. We're going off the highway.
Okay. Let's go to our main review. Okay, so for today's review, we're going to be talking about Sleeping Place of the Feathered Swine by Logan Knight. That is to say, it was written, illustrated, mapped, and laid out by just one person, Logan Knight, and it was published in 2014. It does not have a system attached to it.
But it's assuming
Lamentations. How could it not be Lamentations?
Well, yeah.
It's 2014. Everything basically assumes Lamentations with house rules.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever read something that felt more like Lamentations.
Oh, I mean, it's gross if that's what you mean. It doesn't have any Simpsons mentioned. It also has very few mechanics overall. It is very short, and I don't even think the page number will tell you much because it's statement sized, right? And it's around 36 pages. And I did a little home print, like booklet print, and it prints as a booklet really nice because, you know, there's maybe like two paragraphs of text on each page with a map. So, it's very short, but it's essentially a little dungeon booklet, and it's available on DriveThru for very little money right now. So
also on Itch.
Oh, and it's on Itch. Wow. I didn't realize Logan was even still making stuff when Itch was the thing. I guess he was. But yeah, let's where should we I don't know where to start with this. Brad, why don't you just describe not just what's going on, but maybe the context in which this came out? Because as you say, this is a very 2014 module.
Yeah, it's a small site-based adventure. It takes place in a cave. I think we have something like 13 numbered rooms here. Setting-wise, feels very grounded in, you know, this could be set in like a real life location. We don't have elves and dwarves. These are all humans. Feels European. Are there guns? I don't know if there are. It feels like very Lamentations of the Flame Princess.
I don't believe that guns are mentioned here specifically, but there's like needles and stuff.
Yes. So plot-wise, you see there's this feathered swine. And it's this gross flesh pig thing. It has a beak. I don't know. And it is hibernating on a nest of its own rotting feathers in a cave. And it's got these cysts. All right, stay with me here. The cysts are full of these mites, and Jesus, I don't know. You can do stuff with the cyst. You can drain them of their goop and make stuff with it, right? What are we making with the cyst goop?
Should we do a little content warning? This is really gross. Most of this is going to be really. If you don't like flesh modification. Basically,
body horror.
If you are me, just prepare yourself.
Yeah. Anyway, you can do stuff with the liquid from the cyst. I don't know. I can't remember what you can do with it. Like wizard stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it says. Does it even say? He just says he wants them, right? Does it?
Why are alchemists want them?
Yeah, but the wizard Felix Longworm. No, not Felix Longworm. The other one, Felix works for.
It's not listed who contracted him. Just
no. It's Unraga Prague, isn't it? It's
Unraga Prague. Unraga Prague. Yes, you're right. Yeah. Right. It is Unraga
an alchemist. Prague. Let's just say they are alchemical ingredients, and they are gross.
That's fair. So there are there's these. You can do stuff with the goop from the cysts, and. The hook here is that you are, you know, you're just wandering along doing your own thing, and you find the wizard, Felix Longworm, cowering by stones and a mournful tree. You see, he had this mercenary band that were going to go harvest the goop from the cysts from the pig, but it seems like another adventuring party got there first and screwed up. And they themselves got infested by the cyst mites, by the worms, and it turned them into awful body horror goop creatures who are now in the cave. So that goop still needs to be harvested at the end of the day. So he's like, you seem like enterprising young bucks, why don't you go in there, harvest the goop, and you can have all the money. By the way, my spell book is in there. Do me a solid and get that back for me, because my buddy is carrying it, and you know, they probably got attacked by a goop monster. So that's the setup. You go in a very, very, very awful cave. It's full of body horror goop creatures and a big flesh pig. And you're in very like grounded in reality, but also, in very, very, very extreme body horror stuff. And that's the synopsis.
Would I be crazy for actually saying that, like, within the context of 2014 OSR, within the context of body horror in general, definitely within the context of Logan Knight's work, I actually think that this is like pretty like light on the body horror. Like there's not like that much. I actually think when you like sit down and look at it, I think it's like very visceral and very evocative, because like Logan Knight's like a very talented artist and writer, uh-huh. And it like will make you go like, ugh, but it's like not like, it's not as hard as you can go. It's like not balls to the wall all the time. I think it is like the right level of uncomfortable for people who like are kind of like more or less normal to like get the intended like squick effect.
It feels a little far on the gross out spectrum though. I'm trying to think of like body horror that goes harder here. You know, but I hear you. Yeah, it's a spectrum.
Like within the context of like other like 2014 adventures, especially like the ones like put out by Lamentations themselves, you had the fucking like vagina incest like rape monsters being like transmorphed together like, or whatever. Like this is just like kind of a gross animal and you've got like some zombies that like infect you in a particularly gross way. It's like not the worst. It's like a scooch or two above the last of us, I'd say. And then you've got that one magic armor. That
oh yeah, that's like, really gross. Like,
I think it being
But like okay.
Aside from that, I think that's like basically it.
I will respond by saying I'm gonna read the dedication to this adventure.
Yeah, it sets a tone.
With thanks to the love of my life, Rosie Turner. You were dragged into a hole where your nose was torn off and infested with microscopic parasitic worms. They pulled you out and set your face on fire to try to burn it out. You hemorrhaged to death due to incompetent medical attention, and they left you to rot in a terrible cave. I'll love you forever.
Kind of sweet.
I get it, but for one thing, like, I think this is Logan being cheeky with it. Two, that's the context of his home game. Like I said, like, if you read his blog, he definitely plays up the grossness. But three, like, I don't actually think that that is, like, more like this is something that that's not that far off like what I'd expect to see in like some kind of like horrible kind of like plane crash movie or whatever. Like this is the kind of stuff where it's like something bad happens, you have to do like really nasty bad medical care on site, and then maybe someone like dies in a horrible way. Again, like no like weird like vagina dentata, like no strange like tentacle beasts violating you in awful ways. Like it's just kind of gross medical
it's
biology
not
stuff.
Sexual in the edgelord way that you get from most Lamentations material. Now, Brad and I have a general rule where we don't review Lamentations products that are published by Lamentations for a variety of reasons, but there is some good stuff out there that has been written for it. And what I want to know from you, Ava, is why did you want us to review this module?
I ran this like way back in the day, probably like not too long after it was published, like 2015, 2016. I don't think I ran it well, but I had a really fun time. I really like Logan Knight. I think that like he actually was like a very big influence on Aaron. Like the Zealot class is lifted almost straight up from his system for Mystics. I think that he was like, and I think like also like he like I think for Presage, a lot of directions the OSR would like later take. Like he was like the first guy doing like cutout like arts and crafts type stuff that Mouseritter ended up doing. But I don't think he's like one of those people that like a lot of people talk about. I think that there are formal experiments that he initiated within the OSR that like to this day I don't think have been completed, and it's like really freaking sad. Like his in Carpathium blog post, like, sort of city generation method or whatever, is like is gold. It is like one of my like milestone touchstones for like how to do cities, and actually was like a thing that I very much like hearkened to and referenced when Emil and I were like working on the Electrum Archive 2, which is like based on like the city of Titanport. I don't think Logan Knight gets enough credit, and I love this adventure. I think it's like perfect. I think it's like a perfect little package, and I think it like is about as like comprehensive or like complete a thing that you would need to run an adventure like practically like as a GM. And it's for such a small like little site, and it actually still does take, I know they're only like statement pages, but the fact that it like takes like 36 pages to like detail and like cover all the possibilities for this like little place like is actually like pretty remarkable to me, to think about like how much you really do need, at least when you're like trying to give another person an adventure to cover even like a very small area. But like I really think that this is an adventure that people should like reference more and talk about more, because I think that like, yeah, I think it's like really great. I think it's like near perfect, and it does things that I don't see anybody else doing. And I think that's like a real, real shame that like so many of these threads that he initiated have just been not picked up by anyone.
Well, he also stopped blogging for a while, and then he came back, and then he went away again or something.
Yeah.
I first was introduced to his work through his blog, which is Last Gasp Grimoire, but also the Carpathium. Is that how you say it? Carpathium. Carpathium, yeah, thanks. And I do believe that Isaac Williams does thank him or credit him with the arts and craft inventory in Mouse Raider. So I'm saying he does get some credit from some people, but you're right, he is not known about today. And I think part of that is because he just kind of vanished. So
I think also because he was even in that, like, and I guess, like, because, like, we've been talking about this as if it's like a Lamentations thing. And, like, I mean, obviously, like, I feel like takes that as a base, but, like, a lot of this stuff, all of the explicit mechanical stuff it calls to is, like, not Lamentations, like Rolander. It's, like, very, like, hobbyist. It's very, like, you know, he was posting his home rules, his home system. It's very much that. And I think, like, he really worked in, like, the DIY hobbyist frame that, like, a lot of people, like, said they were doing, but, like, were very caught up in this sort of, like, publishing commercial side of it and the accolades. But, like, this guy was just, like, doing stuff. He was putting out, like, high quality, like, hobbyist work and, like, not engaging in, like, an overly commercial type way. And that is, I think, ultimately the stuff that, like, is very at risk of, like, getting lost in this hobby, right? Like, it's very easy for people to, like, pull up or continue to reference, or for, like, a published game to continue to, like, influence the discourse. But, like, a blog that, like on the best, like, on a lot of days is, like, maybe, like, not, like, running well, or, like, doesn't get, like, DNS errors, like, random PDFs, like, that's the stuff that's, like, in danger, I think, of, like, actually, like, being lost or forgotten. And I think that's, like,
no, you're right. And I found his stuff on Google Plus. So I think him and a number of others, the cone of negative, the guy who did Hexkit, what's his name? I always forget his name. Anyways, they're both just, like, disappeared off of the face of the earth. And, like, I used to...
I think that guy was having, like...
personal stuff. Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. I know. There's personal reasons. There's... Yeah. But also, there's no central place anymore. And you're right that some of that stuff is just gone forever. There's a review I wrote of the very first Thousand Islands that Zedek wrote that is gone. Because I did it on Google Plus. So it's just gone. I wonder if I can get it through Google Checkout. Anyhow... I agree with you. It's a shame. Well, let's get to the main review then. We'll start with you. I mean, I know you already talked about why you like it and how it's perfect, but is there anything specific you want to mention? Not spoilery, but is there anything specific you want to add to your review?
Yeah, I'll start with, like, I think the two things that I like so much about it. One is, like you talked about, like the intended frame for this. Oh, this actually might go to three things. God, the intended frame for this, where you just kind of, like, find this guy in the world, and it feels so, like, in the best way, kind of like Bethesda, like Fallout or the Elder Scrolls or whatever, where it's just like you're about the world, you find this NPC, he gives you, like, a little quest, you go into this cave, it's kind of small, but it has, like, some environmental storytelling that, like, takes you through kind of like a complete arc, and it's just this, like, little vivid, memorable experience. Like, this does actually feel like if you're, like, playing Fallout New Vegas, like, running into, like, kind of like a weird, like, messed up vault, right? Like, it has that, like, same vibe or energy where it's just like you go into a place and something strange happened, you kind of puzzle it together, and there's, like, freaky stuff that comes at you, and then you find a cool thing, you come out the other end, and you're like, whoa, like, that was, like, a little story. And I just love that. And I like also the way that, like, meeting Felix at the beginning gives you context for, and, like, gives you, like, enough information that, like, I think, like, this is, like, often a thing with, like, this kind of era of, like, gross out body horror, kind of like dark, grim, dark horror adjacent kind of dungeoneering, where, like, so much stuff is, like, a gotcha or just, like, jumps out at you, or you just, like, get, like, ambushed by a gross thing and then something terrible happens to you. But, like, the context of, like, meeting Felix gives you, like, a lot of, like, fair warning and kind of, like, again, like a big heads up, like, much like a Bethesda game, where it's just like, here's the deal, like, here's what happened. It's, like, not everything, but it's like, this is the kind of thing you're going to be dealing with, these are the kinds of things that you, like, need to be worried about, which is, like, getting infected, like, not, like, triggering the zombie things with, like, light. And you also have the very, like, real opportunity to just be like, nope, actually, like, I don't want to engage with that, that doesn't sound pleasant. And, like, the appendix has, like, a, like, it covers that eventuality where it's just like, what if the player's, like, bypass this or, like, try to do something else, and it's just like, here's what you could do. And I think that, like, is just, like, a really, really great, fun feeling. And I think it, like, is a perfect, like, little, like, encapsulation of just, like, a module in the, like, classic sense of just, like, putting this thing down in the world, and it kind of just works. I would say that the second thing that I really, really like is the way that it's written. And the way that it's written makes it very usable at the table. Not in the way that we would often think of it now with the, like, kind of bullet point list thing, but I think it's also doing something very similar to I think like directions that like people like Zarkov and like even like Gearing with the Isle have like gestured towards, where it's like instead of trying to make something like immediately usable at the table, like try and write things that are like memorable and are easy to get like stuck, like that are easy to sort of process and integrate within the referee's head. And I think this strikes like a really great balance of both, because you do have room descriptions that are like quite short, a couple like lines that are like neatly like spaced out. But like it's also written in this like very vivid way where it's like written in a second person address, such that it sounds like you're the player and like Logan Knight is like running you through the game more or less. Like not exactly, like you're still being given like GM privy information, but like in the same way that like once you've like been a player in an adventure or a game, it's so much easier to like grok like how would you run it because you've seen it in practice. I think this gets like really close to that same feeling in a really interesting way. Let me see if I can find a specific example that I was like looking at, because so room 6, it like starts out between being like, just inside the crevice is a bloated, bubbled, pale lump of flesh resembling the lower part of a human leg, only because of the pink gilded sabaton still covering its foot. Blah, blah, blah. There's like a next thing that goes like, the crevice narrows and crowds together with joining rock growth and rubble, blocking the way through to Area 1. You could maybe dig it out, but you wouldn't want to be in a hurry. And it has that exact like conversational tone where it's like, this is how I would talk if I was running this. And I'm hearing him, like I'm already getting that groundwork from him. And it's like, and there's like bits that are like bolded and kind of like blown up that are that are like meant to convey the like immediate sense details, and it's just like it's so good. And because it's like written in this mode, like you could almost run this adventure just reading it out, like almost a straight read aloud text, just like omit the stuff that's like hidden information or stuff that the players wouldn't like know immediately. And like, yeah, if you wanted to, you could basically just like treat this as a script.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely written with that intent. I agree with you. It's like, mm-hmm. It's written. It doesn't say go east and west. It says to your right.
yes.
All right, Brad, why don't you tell us what you thought about it?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this one brought up in lists of, you know, classics, and I can see why. I think very strong writing, very visceral writing. It really makes you feel like you're in this cave. Like Ava said, there's a lot of time spent on just describing the cave. I like there's always a kind of a section in every room description where the text gets really big and describes the smells of the room. It's interesting visual presentation that I think really works. It makes the page interesting looking without using almost any art. There's like one illustration in the whole thing.
Two.
But yeah, the writing is very vivid. I think pulling off caves can be tricky, like actually writing about caves. It's just hard to find the language to capture the weird angles and the weird, you know, navigational quirks of getting through a cave. And this really does make it feel like a claustrophobic and alien space. Like this is not, you know, in some D&D modules, walking through a cave is like opening a door to another room. You know, it's just like, it's a cave themed room. But here we're definitely not in rooms. We are definitely in weird underground shapes, these alien geomorphs. And I think that really contributes to the vibe. Yeah, the body horror is really effective. It's disgusting. It's very like grounded body horror. It's, you know, it's not campy. It's really like pulls you in and makes you feel like you are in danger, I think, in a really effective way. Really effective writing. This is not my favorite kind of module. It's not like as winking as some body horror, you know? This is like very much meant to disturb and unsettle. I think I like a little more camp in my body horror, but you know, it's just personal taste aside. That says nothing of the quality of the work. I think it's really strong. And I think, Ava, like you said, they front load a lot of information here, which I think is really effective. You kind of know what you're getting into. And the farther you go, the more it just confirms your suspicions that this is as bad as you think it is. Oh, it's maybe a little worse than you think it's going to be. So really cool. Super tight, you know, packs a lot of punch into 13 rooms. Yeah, I think this would be a super solid, you know, one shot or con game, or just throw it into your sandbox. Here's, you know, an awful little diversion that might kill all your players and turn them into goop creatures or make them amputate their legs. The tense stuff, like the perspective changes, I thought was a little tricky for me because, yeah, Ava, like you said, it does switch to second person sometimes, which I think can be effective. But then it also says stuff like, oh, you see specific person name. And it's like, well, no, because I don't know who this person is. I see just a person I've never seen before because I don't know who these people are. So it kind of mixes things up some ways between information for the GM, information that might be read aloud to the player. I feel like it really skirts close to being like super effective, but in some ways I just get a little disoriented by, hold on, I don't think I'm supposed to read this aloud, but let me just reframe this real quick so I can narrate it. I don't know. I feel like just it could have been tightened up in that sense to make it easier for the GM to just like, hey, I can just read this whole thing without having to like edit and kind of think, hold on, this is information a player can't know yet. So I have to kind of reiterate this in a different way. So yeah, that was a little tricky, I think, at some points, but you know, definitely by no means anything close to like a deal breaker or a major problem. Like this is a very, very, very solid work, I think. Not for me, but a solid work nonetheless. Yeah. So that's what I think.
In the room that I was reading, I think is like a clear example of that, where it says like 15 feet up, Aspeth Montesquieu is there. But like, I actually do think that like, if you wanted to, you could get away with reading it. There's two named characters outside of like Felix that are like in the dungeon. They're all like members of his party. And so like all people that he could tell you about, and it's like where they left him. You know what I mean? Like there's no information or NPCs in this where it's just like the PCs don't know their name yet or anything like that. It is actually like all gleanable from like the beginning or like what Felix could tell them.
Yeah, is it a definite thing that quest giver guy Felix is going with you? I thought it might be like only a possibility.
I don't think it's like a definite thing that he's going with you, but I do think that it is kind of the assumption that I made is that like most of the like critical information here is stuff that he would tell you, at least as a GM, I would like go over, like I would be like, here's like what Felix knows, like, and I think especially if he's like interested in getting his like book back, he'd probably want you to have like all of the details, like give you as much chance to survive as he can.
Well, how about you, Yochai? What do you think about this one?
I think I'm with you, Brad. I mean, I have a real aversion to body horror. This is gross. I will say, before this one, we were originally going to read a different module called Something Stinks in Stilton, which I read the whole thing and then told Brad, yeah, I can't do this one. It's too gross. It's just it's really gross. And there is a tendency to gross with no cause, to like gross out without cause. I don't think that's what this is doing. I think this is very there is a underlying reason for the grossness, and that makes it feel more, you know, manageable for me. I agree. There's much worse stuff, but you know, let's just read page one, shall we? Less educated men must have tracked down the feathered swine first and accidentally burst a cyst, spilling digestive fluid and microscopic worms over their own skin. And after breeding within the cyst of a feathered swine, the worms react very differently to the flesh of a new host. The men who tore the mercenaries limb from limb now resemble little more than shambling masses of cancerous growth, pale bubbles of flesh piled one in the other in yellow and pink-tinged mounds of agony. I'll just stop there. So, very beautifully written and super gross. Yeah. Super, super gross. But definitely the kind of gross that doesn't stop me from appreciating how you know, perfectly written it is. This is a very tight adventure. Yeah. It's very fun. I just published a cave-like adventure, and I kind of wish I had reread this one because I read it years ago, but I wish I had reread it again because it uses the claustrophobia, or like the claustrophobic kind of nature of caves in a way that I wish I had. Caves are terrifying even without monsters, you know? So
definitely.
So this definitely takes advantage of that, and it makes it interesting, and it has a cool NPC you can interact with. So overall, I think it's really cool. It's a good adventure, really well written, easy to run. The maps are, at first, I would say I was a little confused by some of the maps because it doesn't use cardinal directions. It uses perspective based directions, but once you adjust to that, it all makes a lot of sense. And I can see how this would be very smooth to run as a result of that. Overall, I think it's good. There's stuff I can say in our deep dive, but that's as much as I have to say for now.
Yeah, I think speaking of the maps, and like on each page you get a mini map of the room you're in with kind of indications what rooms connect to that. I love it. It's like black ink for the floor plan, and then purple ink kind of shows you the verticality or like features in the rooms or just embellishments. The purple ink is like really scratchy. It looks like notebook, you know, doodles almost. And the black ink is very intentional. It looks fantastic together. And man, it just pops on every page. Like, I'm not wanting more visual embellishments. You know, like when we get the one illustration, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But I'm totally fine with just the map on every page as far as like making the page look good.
The really nice thing is also, and I mean, I wish I had seen this and taken Logan's advice, because when I ran this, I tried to make my players map it. And that was not a good thing, but like he gives you a separate PDF. Like obviously if you're playing VTT, you can just use Fog of War, but he gives you a separate PDF if you're playing physical of like the different rooms of the map that you can kind of, that are separated. So you can like cut out and kind of assemble the thing. And also that's what's really nice is that like the illustrations, there's two illustrations in the book, and then they are like replicated just like on their own. At the back, like the one of the worm tumor, and then the sweet
oh right,
there so is, that you can actually just element, like yeah. have a page that's nothing but art, so that you can show it to your players. I think there's just like a lot of like really thoughtful consideration like that throughout the module for like how to use it, how will you use this, both like if you're running it digitally or if you're running it physically. That's just like really elevates it for me.
And it's just like it's just such a tightly constructed module. There's just no wasted rooms. There's no, you know, sometimes I read a module that is kind of like micro in scope and it just feels like it didn't have enough room to breathe. That's not the case here. I feel like the ideas are perfectly expressed in the space we have. There's no like add-on room like, oh, by the way, here's another little cave where like you know, something totally else is going on. I think that can really add flavor and make a module all the better. I don't think we need that here. I don't find myself missing that.
It has, I think, just like the perfect amount where there's like two little things like the pearl and like the two people that are like infected but not yet tumors, where it's like this could spill out and have like some like broader like campaign implications.
I just think like to continue on like my point here, I think like it's because just the pacing of this is so effective. Like anything else that wasn't directly related to the main motif of this dungeon, which is like the body worm creatures, would feel like it would kind of ease us out of some of the tension, right? But this is such like a little horror movie of a module.
Yeah, it's like perfectly constructed the exact same way as like an 80 minute, like maybe like something you'd watch on Shudder, like a B movie, like direct. It's just like a tight little tone piece. Yeah. It's like it's perfect. No, and but I think that like you see, I think that you as like a really bona fide like horror fan, like you can see the same thing, and like you can tell that like Logan is also like a connoisseur, like he's bathed in these waters.
Yes, but this is like a mean little horror movie. This is not like, oh, we get a little levity here, here's a gratuitous sex scene, here's like some funny camp character that gets murdered. This is just like all like tension. Yeah,
I'll make a defense for that. I don't know if this is something that's like better in the deep dive or not, but like I actually think that there, because you were talking about like this plays it too straight and there's not enough of a winking of it. But I would say that like in my experience, and I think like one of the things about like gross out horror is that like playing it straight becomes its own kind of camp. Like sometimes like when there's like these like and I think especially the kinds of like moments that this like brings out and like what comes up in playing is like, you know, it gets to the point where it's like, oh, like something's horrible has happened to a character. Like you got, and like it's set up to do this perfectly with like, now yeah. that the worms have infected some people, they're not as bad. You can get away if you like amputate your own limb. And it's just like such a horrible, like sick feeling of tension where like that happens. Everyone at the table is going like, oh my God. Yeah. And like you're narrating it. Everyone's like kind of cringing and wincing. And then once it happens, you have that like beautiful, like flood of like release. And everyone like kind of like laughs and everyone's kind of like it's almost like ridiculous to think about like how invested you are in and the tension of it, and then like yes. even like just like the grossness of it. It's kind of like a Sam Raimi like Evil Dead 2 thing where like the gross outness of it makes you go like oh, but then yes. you like laugh. It's like funny, and I think like I think you actually lessen that like organic coming from the audience feeling of like of that like laughter and that release if you play it too straight, if you play it too winking and camp, and like yeah. don't actually like give them the full opportunity and the like space and the grace to like actually experience that emotion and therefore have that release.
Yes. Yes.
All right. On that note, let's deep dive it so you can actually say,
I thought we were already deep.
Well, dived. I didn't get to. Okay. Well, look, there's, let's just say, all right.
Just play the deep dive okay. bumper again. If you already played it once, play it a second time right here. Deep dive part two.
Deep dive.
Spoilers.
Yes. Deep dive for sleeping place of the feathered swine starting now.
Deep dive. Spoilers.
Okay. So
you see, there's these worm creatures, and let's explain what's really going on. There's this pig thing, and it's got these worm creatures. And we already said everything that really happens.
What?
Yeah, there's the one.
What's the? You ever notice these alchemists? They always want these cysts from a feathered swine.
Oh, I mean, she's Seinfeld.
Oh my God!
They took my spellbook, Jerry. It's still in the cave.
Okay. No. Wow. Yeah. Why does this dude have Felix's spellbook?
Even the text is like, for some reason, someone else is carrying. It's totally left unexplained in the.
It might have been one of those things where, you know, like, you're ever out with like your partner and you like give them like your debit card or your wallet or something, and then like 2 days later you're like, where the fuck is that? And it's just like,
yeah,
you never got it back.
That,
from him, you know? What
no,
I mean?
That I was heavy. In New York last week, and we took my kid to the Natural History Museum there. And my wife's friend was supposed to meet us, and my wife, like many of my friend's partners, does not answer her phone. And so her friend was calling her, and she wasn't noticing. So her friend called me, and I, of course, answered. And she said, let me talk to your wife. So I handed my phone over to her, and then yeah. she just disappeared.
Put it in.
Yeah, with both phones. Like my son and I didn't go anywhere. We were in the same little boxed area. Hilarious. And she was just gone. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm never gonna see her again. I just didn't know, you know.
Yeah. That's it. That's what happened to Felix's spellbook.
Yeah, it's just yeah. 1 minute, you know.
And you don't want to walk around a cave with a hardcover.
He's like, yeah. He's like, I want to take a closer look at this. Could you hold my book for a second? And yeah, the next thing you know, he's like, his legs are gone. You're cowering by a tree. Some guys got gooped.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense. And there is a lot that happens here. You know, on the back of it, we didn't mention this earlier, or the second to last page, there's the unorthodox index of important things, and it lists a really quick reference for all the major elements in the cave, including uh-huh. you know, the wizard and the leader of the party, Aspeth Montesquieu. Yeah, if that's not that's not a Lamentations name, I don't know what is.
I know, it totally is.
And and then of course what happens with the tumors and all that. Very cool.
Stat blocks for the two creatures.
Yeah, stat blocks.
There's only two types of monsters in this whole thing too. Wow. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. it's small. It's cave. It's cool. I like that. So what did you guys have anything?
I mean, I think that that makes the horror more effective too. If you're not fighting like, there's a mushroom person at the entrance. It's like,
it's definitely got like that, like a, have you guys seen like The Descent? Like it's like very, very reminiscent of that.
Sure, yeah.
It's also a great book that I read after this called The Troop by Nick Cutter, which is like so much like this. It's about like a group of Boy Scouts on an island that gets infected by like a super tapeworm. Oh, perfect.
Is it gross?
Oh, it's gross in the same way that this is gross, but like a little bit like less so, but it's like very like, it's, I think like it's like a queasy sick to your stomach in the same way when you read about like, again, like people that like crashed a plane on the side of a mountain and have to like eat themselves or whatever.
That doesn't bother me as much as, okay, I'm going to be a little vulnerable here for a moment. And hopefully this will never get used against me.
Yeah.
I have a, I don't know if you'd call it a disorder. My father has it as well. And I've recently learned that my son has it as well, where basically visual modifications of flesh that are severe, there are some tribes in Africa that I've seen photos of that do this, that like take needles into their skin and make little bumps. Or there's a frog. Please don't Google this. There's a frog called the Suriname toad.
The one with all the holes?
That's the one. I vomited when I first saw that frog. I saw it in real life.
Do you have like trypophobia? Yeah, trypophobia.
No, it's the same. It's part of that, but my fixation is on body modification. And it's a kind of fascination where I can't look away, you know? It's funny, on the same trip to New York, my son and I had a conversation where I realized he has the same problem as me and my father. And for my father, it's he can't look at petrified wood. Like specifically petrified wood reminds him of body modification. And it could be like a Holocaust-y thing, but I had this girlfriend in high school and she had this piece of petrified wood she'd given me and I put it in a room. And my father would not enter that room. It was like a ward against him. It's to this day, and I'm the same way. I just can't handle it. So my limit with these kinds of adventures is if it's in any way reminiscent of that, flesh, that egg that from Central America that, you know, there's like a fly that buries.
It burns under your skin.
That's it. I'm out. We're done. Thank you. Going home. That's my limit.
With regards to the troop, I would say that the thing that it gets is like, I don't think there's like body modification per se. Like it gets gross in the same way where it's like what you would expect if someone had like a super tapeworm, like eating all of their nutrients. So people become like emaciated very quickly. And like, you know, lips become fucked up, like weird
I see.
Pus.
I see. Like, yeah, that's fine. That's
like
fine.
That and urinate. And like become like essentially like living mummies, but like not like they grow like warts or cancer spots or things.
Yeah,
like that,
so that I can handle. I can handle that. No problem.
But it reminds me very much of this in terms of like a very like biologically grounded infection. You know, that then like compels you or whatever. I was like getting back to the adventure, just like the comment on the two adventures is like I feel like I've still seen so many things, like I think what you're talking about, Brad, like with things that aren't given room to breathe, where it's still like, you know, a 10, 12, 15 page, like a 15 area, like dungeon or cave or whatever that people still like shove like a D6 encounter table or something into. And it just is like, yeah, like it doesn't give it room to breathe. And like, just like, she's going to be like, there's like two things in this cave, basically is like, I think a kind of bold and smart choice.
Yeah. I think it's a hard trick to just like, I don't know. This is carried by its tension, not by its possibility of the unknown. It's just like, you know, what's down there and you're hoping it's not as bad as you think it is, but it's relentless. And I think that makes it really effective.
And you know what? I would say that like it actually manages to use that. Like there's like, we're talking about tightness and there's something that like is almost like this is such a weird comparison, but like, almost like Mario-esque about the way that it like deploys this thing where it's just like, we have this one mechanic, which are like these like worm tumors. And we are just going to like take the space in this little level to explore the different permutations of it. Like you have like one room where there's like four of them. You have like one room where like there's like a guy hiding and it like combines these things in combination with the environment such that like across the thing, you get to have like just like a couple solid like little encounters with them, all of them in like different configurations. So it doesn't feel stale. It's still like fresh each time. And you're like still like engaging with the core mechanic of this thing, which is like they're photosensitive to light. And if you get too close or whatever, they'll get the worms on you. And I think that's just, I think like, I would like, I think like a lot of people, especially in the OSR, like side of things, like treat like game design or the idea of things being like overly designed as like a kind of a dirty word. But like, this is like, I think just like a perfect encapsulation of just like how you can really do level design and explore like a concept or a conceit, like fully, like just end it on a high note, like give it the space it needs, explore it, go through the motions, let it have that arc and then let it lie gracefully.
Yeah. This knows why it's interesting. And I think it exploits that fully. Yeah. So I agree with you.
Yeah. It sort of reminds me a little bit, this whole, you know, exploration of disease and like, you know, when I was reading it, I thought, well, why would an alchemist want this disgusting stuff? And then I realized, like, it's not that different from Pavlov, you know, the Pavlov, Pavlovian experiments, whatever. Like, that guy was a psychopath. Like, he killed thousands of dogs, and he wasn't doing experiments. He was extracting some biochemistry that was produced when they drooled, and he was doing it by torturing dogs for their adrenaline. I think he wanted it because then you could I guess the adrenaline was used in either medicinal or homeopathic medicine, whatever. And he, like, he quote unquote figured out you could make them drool. But what he really figured out is that their body would produce this adrenaline that he would then collect by cutting them open while they were alive and constantly torturing them with this bell and later a metronome. And yeah, so what I'm trying to say is that scientists and alchemists should all be bad guys in all of our games, because they are. That is,
It's so funny that, like, all the weird, twisted, fucked up body horror stuff, like, does not upset me in the slightest. But when you talk about, like, we're starting to talk about, like, people mistreating dogs.
And now you draw the line. Like, now, yeah, it's true. Oh, if a show kills a dog or a cat, they better justify it. You know, this is not a thing you do lightly, because these are our friends.
I also like, do you think that, like, they're, at least in the way that it, like, describes what the parasites and the cysts do, there's, like, you can, like, you know, if you've got, like, a decent understanding of, like, medicine or biology, you can see, like, actually quite a few, like, practical applications for it, right? Like, it's well, because it's like, they are a colony of an organism that, like, is, like, self-perpetuating, like, it'll continually repopulate, which also has, like, you know, you sort of have this, like, on tap supply of biomass, and they also, like, these are digestive sacs, so the liquid itself also, like, has a function, like, it breaks down certain kinds of matter. And I think, like, combining those two qualities, you can, like, see, like, a fair amount of, like, whatever scientific, alchemical, medicinal applications that you might use out of this type of thing.
It's terrible, I agree. All right, so yeah, the armor was really cool. Even after hearing about how awful it is, the armor, the, like, magic armor.
It's like a really messed up still suit, right? Like, from Dune.
It has a field of overly long nipples is what the description. Oh, it's so gross. The gross part was, like, taking it off.
Healthy rows of healthy porcine teeth.
Yeah, there it is. That's,
yeah, I don't want to wear that armor.
Yeah, yeah, it's disturbing.
Latches onto your butt and your.
It's.
I like that it, like, self selects. Like, if anyone, like, looks at this thing, where it's like the plates look like cellulite, the sabatons resemble the heads of infants. Like, if anyone, like, puts that on, they're, like, the kind of person that's going to be okay with what the armor does to them. You know what I mean? Yeah. As a player, at least.
So I like how it says it can be removed, but you may want to clean away the liquefying skin and fat that strings from the corpse clinging to the inside of the armor.
And it, like, I mean, that, like, foreshadows the curse effect of it. Like, I think that's, like, actually, like, say what you will, but, like, again, like, I think, like, Logan does a very good job of, like, what a lot of other, like, Lamentations or, like, this kind of era of things do, where, like, it really does actually, like, give you quite a lot of hints at where it's like the grossness level is about to escalate. Do you want to opt in or not? You know what I mean? because the armor, like I said, I think the armor is, like, Logan putting it in. This is, like, I think closer to his, like, base level of grossness. Like, the cave is at, like, one level, and then you get this armor, and he, like, really cranks up the signifiers. Like, he really, like, goes ham with this description. There are, you know, you won't mistake this for a normal suit of armor. And it's really just being like, if you want to engage with this, like, know what you're getting into, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, he writes in this interesting authorial voice throughout, you know, fun times for the person who wears it. And then at the end, 18 AC, so that's good.
18 AC, so that's good. I think that, like, covered, like, I think that, like, again, like, carries through that, like, conversational tone and that, like, very, like, almost like GM to GM or, like, player practitioner to practitioner vibe of it. Like, he says, like, there's, like, you know, that bit in one of the appendices where he's just like, the epilogue, it's like, do you want to change stuff? Here's examples of how you can change stuff. Please change stuff. This is yours now. Have fun with it. And again, like, I think when I was talking earlier about, like, you know, how do you make like adventures usable at the table and these like different directions or whatever. And I think it's just like the core challenge of like RPGs trying to circulate as a medium in print has been the fact of like, how do you accurately transmit knowledge that is like very, I think, like embodied and particularly oral, right? Like the best way to learn an RPG or whatever is to have like your fucking like friend's older cousin like teach you to be a dungeon master. But like, how do you accurately and like properly convey and transmit that level of like local oral knowledge? And I think that like this sort of tack of just like having this conversational tone that really does just feel like, like if I wrote an adventure and I was like, here's how you might want to run in this, Yohai or Brad, like this is like the kind of, this is the way I would talk about it. And I think that's like a very, yeah, I don't know, again, like a very valuable sort of like direction that like I wish more people took up.
Yeah, I love it when they make options at the end for running it in different ways to tailor it to you, and they give you suggestions. I also like the section called I'm done with this.
Done with cave. This cave. Yeah. Done. Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's all these gross spell books.
Yes.
Just,
yes.
Those spells were in my campaign that I ran this for in a bit, and they like maybe other people don't agree, these were funny. Like these were funny. Every time we cast these spells, they're so over the top. Like in Fold, Subcutis got a lot of play, and every time it happened, it was like, I can't believe this is like an actual spell we're casting. This is hilarious.
So gross. That's the one where they you get absorbed into,
you enfold them, yeah, within, yeah, like a just like a, like a, like a fat bird. Yeah, like those, so like those fat birds that you see in like the sewers, yeah, right?
That's, yeah, really gross. That's, as I said, honestly, the most disgusting art is of the feathered swine, because its little beak looks like a shriveled penis, and I
yeah, I think that was intentional. Definitely. And you, the worm tumors also have a little shriveled penis and a much enlarged scrotum. Yeah,
it is gross. The whole thing is very gross. All right. Well, do you guys have any final thoughts? Anything else you want to add?
Ooh, no, I don't know. This is it is what it is, man. I think it's pretty, it's a tight little, mean little spooky thing. I think it's cool. Yeah, good job.
Good job. Good job, Logan. Come back. We miss
you. Logan Knight, please come back. My people are suffering. Yeah, President Knight.
President Knight. Okay. All right. Well, Ava, it has been such a pleasure to have you on. And if you have something, you know, super messed up you want us to read in the future, please let us know. Otherwise,
let's do exposure therapy for Yohai. We'll hit him on one end with like endless Spider-Man chatter, and then on the other hand with like gross at body horror stuff. Yeah. No relief from Yohai.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been Between Two Cairns. You can reach us at betweentwocairns@gmail.com. Thank you to Bobby McKellar for the music and for the mailbag bumper, and to Direct Sun for the deep dive bumper. Thanks to Ava Islam for joining us. And oh, before we leave, I should actually give you an opportunity to say where people can find more of your stuff.
Oh, I mean, the best place to like reach me these days is like on Discord. Go to killjester.com, join the Discord server. I'm like nominally still on Twitter at youngdumbbitch, at D-U-M, Y-U-N-G-D-U-M, bitch. But like, I mean, maybe I'm on the other platforms as well at this point, but like I'm never on them. Yeah, like if you, I have my blog, permanentcranialdamage.blogspot.com. One of the, I'm in the process of like moving to a new domain, but like, yeah, I'm around. If you, Ava Islam, type it in the Google Ava Islam RPG, you'll probably find me. Not hard to reach. Cool.
Okay. Well, again, right, thanks for coming on, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you, listeners. We love you. We're writing you a letter, and we're sealing it with a kiss. And it says, "Dear reader, we love you. We're thinking of you. You are so special and so sweet. And thank you for just being you." Mwah, 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 mwah.
Smooches, besos. Kisses on the lips.
Spraying my spritz of my finest perfume on it.
A lock of my hair for my sweet, a token to guide you through the war.
What a special time, special memories. Oh. And we hope that you're making special memories of your own.
Okay. Okay. Take all right. Care. Goodbye. Bye.
Goodbye.
Oy, boy.